Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET for DSL Extreme.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, October 20th, 2007, on the Premier Radio Networks. This is show 397. Enjoy. Well, a good day to you. It's time to talk
hard tech.
Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. This is the show where we talk about digital technology. So that's, of course, computers, yes. And the internet, of course. Windows, Mac, Linux, Web 2.0, all that stuff. But also cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater and all that stuff, too. If it's got a chip in it, if it's digital technology, this is what we talk about on the show. And I would love to hear from you. Let me give you my phone number, 888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to yell at me, if you want to tell me something, so we could make it 888-YELL-LEO, 888-TELL-LEO, but really we only have one, and it's 888-ASK-LEO. But don't be fooled by it. It's not just for asking. It could be telling. It could be yelling. You could come at me with a claw hammer. No, don't do that. Although, I must admire Mona Shaw. Let's take a minute to recognize Mona Shaw, a consumer advocate of the first water, of the highest degree, who finally was fed up by the lousy support she was getting and decided to take matters into her own hands. Now, I'm not advocating the use of claw hammers to take matters into your own hands, but you've got to kind of look at her and say, wow, you go, girl. From Washington, the Washington Post, Mona is 75 years old, and she and her husband just had it with the lousy service they were getting from Comcast, their cable company, and they took matters into their own hands. Comcast, not known for its high quality customer service, not exactly, but I've never had anything this bad happen. I have to say, and I know they're trying, because I've had a better experience lately with Comcast. But listen to this. She wanted to sign up for that triple play service they've been talking about, combining phone, cable, and internet service. You know, I mean, that's pretty good. She wants to throw a packet of money at them every month. She set up an appointment. They didn't show up. That was back in August. They just didn't show up. They come 2 days later. Oh, hi. Oh, you're here now. Okay. They left with the job half done. That was Wednesday. On Friday, they just cut it off. They turned off the service. That's it. So Mona and her husband Don went to the local call center to say, hey, where's our service? You know, we want this triple play. Mona asked to speak to a manager. A customer service representative at the Comcast office in Manassas says, somebody will be right with you. Go outside for a moment. Sit on the bench and we'll get to you. Now, it's mid-August. It's boiling hot. She and Don are in their mid-70s. They sit there. 1 hour goes by. 2 hours go by. They've been sitting out in front of the Comcast office like good little customers for 2 hours in the hot August sun. Then the customer rep leans out the door and said, oh, I'm sorry. The manager's left for the day. Bye-bye. That was it. She snapped. She said, they thought just because we're old enough to get Social Security, we lack both brains and backbone. She stews over it all weekend. The following Monday, she goes downstairs gets her husband's claw hammer and says, "Come on, honey, we're going to Comcast." The Washington Post reporter asked her husband, "Did you try to stop her?" "Oh, no, no, no," he said. She storms into the office. Bam, whacks the keyboard of the customer service rep. Bam, down goes the monitor. Bam, she smashes the telephone. People scatter. They scream. Of course, the police come. The police walk in the door, and she gives one last shot to the phone. She says, "Take me away, boys." She says, "They cuffed me right then." They took her out. She hyperventilated. They had to get an ambulance, a stretcher. She got a suspended sentence and a $345 fine to pay for the damage she did. Does she have any regrets? She says, "Comcast is a bunch of submoronic imbeciles." So we don't encourage the use of hammers in resolving customer service. She says, "After I hit the keyboard, I turned to this blonde who had been there the previous Friday, the one who told me to wait for the manager, and said, 'Now do I have your attention?'" Beth Basha, a vice president for Comcast, spoke to the Washington Post, and she says, "Truly a unique and inappropriate situation." She says, "We can't disclose our client's records, but the service record isn't exactly what Mona said it was. Besides," she said, "nothing justifies this sort of dangerous behavior." Oh, that's of course. We're not advocating the use of claw hammers in resolving these matters. But doesn't it feel a little bit good? Bob Garfield, who runs the ComcastMustDie.com website, says, "I'm happy that the site has become an outlet for so much deep-seated rage against Comcast, but I do hope that you won't you will keep the hammer assaults down to a bare minimum." She's a nice lady, former retired Air Force nurse, married 45 years, secretary of the local AARP. She's a secretary of the Square Dancing Club. They have 7 dogs they've taken in. Churchgoer. She has a heart condition, but she does lift weights at the local gym. She's got some muscle. Police did give her hammer back, and she swears she'll never use it again. And by the way, bottom line, she did get her phone service from Verizon. You got to wonder if Verizon knew. I shouldn't laugh, but doesn't it just, you go, yeah, finally. Finally. how many times have we been just, treated like that, ignored, left to sit in the sun for 2 hours, and then, "Oh, I'm sorry, he's left already." I mean, that's straight out of The Office. So, I think a new hero for our time, Mona the Hammer Shaw. Wow. Leopard's coming out this week. Thursday, I'll be going down to Apple to take a look at it for the first time. Friday at 6 p.m., you'll be able to get it in the stores. Don't have much to say about it. Apple's trumpeting 300-plus new features in its new operating system, an update to the OS X operating system. A lot of those 300-plus features are things like, you can format the hard drive 3 different ways instead of 2. I think there may be a few that will make a difference to you. It kind of depends on what applications you use the most. iChat has been much updated. I'm actually interested in that because iChat now has a much higher quality codec. So the audio quality, which has been inferior before, we use Skype for all my recording because Skype is so much better. But now that iChat is using AACLD, which is a very high quality codec, if you have enough bandwidth, it should sound really good, full fidelity. And this is something Skype never did, and I'm thrilled to see iChat do it. They offer audio and video recording of your conversations. I expect a lot of podcasters will be looking at this as a new tool. So, that's a feature that most people aren't going to get excited about, but a few might. There's new features in Mail. The biggest difference, I think, the thing that will make the most difference in the long run is kind of invisible. If you have a multiprocessor Mac, and most people do, you'll notice better performance because for the first time, OS X is optimized for multiprocessors. Okay, so that's good. They've updated internal features like the core animation, which that's not one of the 300 plus features. Well, it is, but I mean, for most people, that's like, well, yeah, okay. Where you really see it is in the months to come when application developers update their applications. You'll see better performance, new capabilities. So, you know, it's kind of invisible initially, but it's something that you will see a difference. And there's a lot of things like, you know, okay, now you can look up an address in the address book with Google Maps. You know, I mean, there's silly stuff. It's not going to make a huge difference. One of the things I'm looking forward to seeing, and I haven't played with this yet, but I look forward to it, is the new preview capabilities built in. If you use a Macintosh or even iTunes on Windows, you've probably seen this cover flow that allows you to scroll through album covers. Well, they're going to add this to they call it Quick Look, a way to look at the documents in your drive, scrolling through them and seeing them in, little thumbnails of the contents. So images, but also word processing, even movies and music. And the previews can be pretty big. That could be very useful. We'll see. You know, I think this is going to be an upgrade that most Mac users will want. It's $129. It is probably not a must-have, but we'll see. I'll give you a more detailed review once I've played with it next weekend. But that's going to be a big story this week for Apple users anyway. More to come. I'll tell you what, let's take some calls. Talk about what you're interested in talking about. What do you say? Also, Scott Wilkinson, our video expert. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Woohoo! Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 88888888888. I got stuck there. Ask Leo. Just two 88s. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. Jacob on the line from Willard, Utah. Hello, Jacob. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great.
Good. Hey, I'm a big fan of yours. Been watching you for a long time since the ZDTV days.
Wow.
Got a question for you.
Okay.
So I have a blog. I'm going to toast it by Blogspot. Recently, all of my backlinks disappeared, and along with it, my page rank. Now, other search engines have my backlinks, just not Google. I know I haven't been banned from Google because I still come up on their searches, so I don't know what's going on.
When you say backlinks, you mean links to older content?
No, links to other people that link to me.
Trackbacks.
Google's just not seeing that.
Interesting. You know, Google is the first to, and not all engines honor this, but the first to honor a new HTML tag, the rel tag, and they're doing this to avoid Google spam. And it may be, I wouldn't be surprised, in fact, if those other blog engines that are linking to you are adding this rel tag. If you add rel, R-E-L equals no follow to any HTML link, Google will ignore it.
Oh, really?
And the purpose of that is, in fact, you to avoid blog spam, basically. So you'll see in most blog. What you're using Blogger, you said.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure Blogger does this. I know WordPress does this. Most blogs will do this, where they'll when they put a link in, they'll add the nofollow directive to it. So what I would do is I would go back and see if you can find somebody who's linked back to you, and take a look at the HTML of that page and see if there's a rel equals nofollow in there.
Okay.
If there is, then they're not following. What's the name of your blog?
The Insanity blog. It's a blog about tea that I've been, you know, I've kept it up for 2 years.
Oh, I like it.
Recently, yeah, it's great.
Insanitea?
Yeah, Insan-T. Insana-T.
Insana-T. What a great idea. So
I just kind of have a lot of fun with it. But,
yeah.
You know, it's only been very recently that my backlinks disappeared. I had them until I left for the summer, and then they were gone.
Yeah, I don't know that that's what it is, but that's a relatively recent addition by Google. They may, trackbacks are fairly important to a blog because that's what gives you rank.
Right. That's how I get people to make me reviews.
Yeah. So you know that people are linking to your articles.
Yeah, there's a lot of people linking to me. You know, hundreds, in fact, because I do a lot of product reviews.
Yeah. That doesn't sound like it's going to be the no-follow. I would take a look, though, just to make sure that that's not happening. If you could find somebody who's linking to you, just look at the source of the page and see if it says no-follow. If it doesn't have the no-follow, then it is Google, for some reason, dropping those links out. Now, this does happen, and it doesn't necessarily mean you've been banned from Google. Google can slow down on you in all sorts of ways. If they decide that you are, for instance, soliciting links to yourself. In fact, if all of a sudden your site goes from no trackbacks to hundreds of them, what Google assumes is, oh yeah, the guy's created a spam farm, link farm, and he's soliciting links, or something's happened. And Google's very, as you might have noticed, very angry, aggressive about pursuing this, because they don't want a lot of spam links in their search results. So what they do is they strip out of their search results pages where they think the pages are in some way trying to game Google. Doesn't mean you'll be banned. You may still show up, but it could limit pages you're getting. Those are the only two things I can think of. So look, see if there's a no follow in there. If there is, there's the only thing you could do is ask the people who link to you not use the no follow command. They could turn that off usually in the blog platform. And the other is, if it's Google decided that they want to slow down the links to you, there's nothing you can do about that. There's no appeal. They won't even admit they're doing it most of the time. There's no system, and Google really needs to institute this somehow. There's no system right now to go to Google and say, hey, what are you doing to me? You're killing me here. I'm not a spammer. If you've noticed on Google, if you go to, use your Google searches, you'll notice there are far fewer bad links now, thanks to that. Used to be you'd search for something like automobiles and the first 20 results would be link farms, not real pages, but pages designed to generate traffic, high Google rankings, and by linking to a lot of sites. Google uses those links to determine ranking. It's the only thing I can think of. It's a nice site, by the way. I'm looking at it right now, Jacob. Insanity, insanity-tea.blogspot.com. I'm big into tea, so I can guarantee you I'll be coming regularly. Maybe even I'll link to you. We'll see what happens. If you look at this, and by the way, you're hosted by Google. So I don't know, Google definitely searches into its own Blogspot. There was, and maybe this related to this, there was for a while, people were worried about blog pollution on Google search results. Blogs do so much cross-linking. They generate a lot of traffic, and they generate higher Google rankings. So for a while, blogs were topping lots of the Google search results, and I think Google may have tuned that as well. But they do search into blogs. Those are the only things I can think of. Our chat room is open, irc.dslextreme.com, if you want to join in, or if you think you've got a solution, maybe you know what happened to Jacob and happened to you, and you can tell him what to do about it, irc.dslextreme.com. You can also visit our show notes. Sasha's writing those down right now. It's at the Tech Guy Labs site, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Coming up, home theater expert Scott Wilkinson will talk about Blu-ray, HD, DVD. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Unlimited local and long distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER. From the Tech Guy Labs in beautiful Northern California, Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk home theater, as we do every week at this time, with my buddy Scott Wilkinson. He is the video editor for the beautiful, beautiful Perfect Vision magazine. You look for it on newsstands. I mean, it's just gorgeous, but you can also find it online at avguide.com and download a free PDF every month of the magazine, which is kind of neat because you got clickable links, more going back to more information online and so forth.
Lots more information, yeah.
Yeah. So, Scott, you were at the big HDTV conference.
Yep, I was. I just got back from that. It was at the the Hilton Hotel at near right near Universal Studios, so right in the middle of what people think of as Hollywood.
And who threw this, and who was it for?
It was put on by a company called Display Search, which is a flat panel market research company. And it was primarily, I guess, for professionals in the industry, manufacturers and analysts and certainly members of the press. There were a couple hundred people there, and we had 2 days of conferences, of workshops and sessions, panel discussions. There was a small little exhibit area where some companies showed off their wares, and I actually found some really interesting things in that display area, which I'll get to. I learned a lot of stuff in the workshops. They were mostly panel discussions. We learned, of course, as we already know, that the DVD market has peaked. It peaked in 2005 or 2006. Might be declining a little bit now.
That surprises me. I thought it would be continuing to grow.
Yeah, no.
Why do you think it's slowing down?
Well, because the market penetration is at something like 85 or 90%.
It's not that people are going back to their VHS tapes.
Well, no, they're not going back to their VHS tapes.
And we know they're not going HD DVD because that's not taking off either.
Well, no. And yet this is, I think, this flattening is why the studios and the hardware manufacturers are so interested in HD DVD and Blu-ray and what's called the next gen disc.
Right. I think I may be wrong, but I'd be curious what the sense was there at this conference. But my sense is they're a little frustrated by the fact that consumers just are not flocking to high def discs, either Blu-ray
or
HDVD.
That's right. In fact, we got inundated with statistics and study numbers and so on. And one of them was they found that the intent to purchase next gen disc is very low. It's like 66%.
Wow.
Why? One of the main reasons is that a lot of the respondents claimed that DVD, regular standard definition DVD, is good enough. 70% of respondents said that. 72% said that the price is too high. When you can get a DVD player for under $100, well under $100, and then you're looking at spending at minimum $300 for an HD DVD player or $500 for a Blu-ray player and up from there, it's pretty easy to see why should I do that when DVD is good enough.
Right, right. Very
there's a format war.
Right. That also hurts it because nobody wants to take a chance.
Nobody wants
to buy the wrong one.
That's right. That's right. 54% said that the format war was a reason why their intent to purchase was low.
I'm surprised it's that high. I frankly think that people aren't that aware of high def DVDs.
Well, I suppose awareness might be another part of it.
Is this universe that they're talking to people who own high definition televisions?
Yeah, generally speaking, that's correct.
Okay, so that is kind of surprising that it's only 60% of all people who own high def TVs are even considering buying an HD. High def DVD player.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. Now I learned that the HD TV market penetration is something on the order of 20 to 30% of the U.S. households, depending on who you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Consumer Electronics Association pegs it at 30%. If I'm looking down at my notes here, only 40% of those households have high definition service. So another big problem is, people are buying high-definition televisions, bringing them home and hooking them up to their standard-definition cable or satellite and so on, and sort of maybe believing that they have high-definition and then kind of being a little disappointed.
I think a lot of people do. But it's a high-def TV set.
That's right. That's right. But what they don't understand is that they need a high-definition source of some sort or another, whether it be high-definition disc or high-definition service from their cable company or from their satellite company or over the air with an antenna. And so my job is cut out for me, which is to educate the consumer that you really need a high-def source to really get the most out of that new high-def TV you just bought.
I have no axe to grind in this. I can understand why people think DVD is good enough, and it is. It looks pretty darn good even on an HD set, but I have to say, when you see on a good HD set a high def DVD, whether Blu-ray or HD DVD, it is much better, and it really is a great experience. And if you have a good high def set, it seems to me you really ought to have HD DVD. If so, either, and I'm going to pick one of Blu-ray or HD DVD, but you should have one.
That's correct. That's correct. You really should. And
it just looks so good. It does look different.
It does look different. It looks so much better. It is a real quantum leap. A lot of people are saying, oh, the leap from videotape VHS to DVD was this huge quantum leap. And now from DVD to HD disc is not as big a leap. And that may be true. But once you look at it, as you've just said, you know, once you actually see a real high definition source on your high definition TV, there's no going back. You'll instantly see the difference, even with something like an up-converting DVD player, which converts the standard definition up to high-definition quality, but it's doing so by adding a bunch of information that isn't there. So it just doesn't look the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks good. Looks fine.
Looks fine. I think to most people, hey, this looks as good as a movie. I'm happy with this. Looks a lot better than my standard television signal.
Well, even my wife, who's not a technology person, really, you know, once she started seeing real high definition in our house, she started going, I do see what you're talking about. I do see what the big deal is. So it's important, I think, for people who get those new high definition televisions to get a high definition source. It could be cable, and a lot of cable companies, I heard at this conference, in fact, a lot of cable companies are offering their high definition programming, their high definition channels, for no extra money. You buy some sort of tier package or something, and you get the high definition, at least some of them, maybe not the premium ones like HBO and Showtime, but Discovery HD Theater, which is now just called HD Theater. They've recently rebranded. ESPN, HD Net, some of these national channels that just looks stunning in HD. And so I really recommend that people who have an HD or are buying an HD TV get some sort of high definition source, because you really do see a great big difference. We learned that sports is the biggest reason by far that people buy and watch HD TV, 60 or 70 some percent, something like that, you know, are buying sports. And that right there, if you're a sports fan, which I happen not to be, but a lot of people are, and if you are, and you look at football or basketball
really
or baseball or NASCAR, I actually enjoy watching NASCAR.
You don't seem like the NASCAR type, Scott.
I'm not the NASCAR type, but boy,
but the roar of the engines and it's exciting.
Yeah, and see, it's very exciting, and you see every person in the crowd at the far end of the track.
Yeah.
In the stands, it's really stunning. It's beautiful. So,
and movies look better. And anyway,
they
do have an uphill climb. And I just, you know, we've talked about this before, but I just think I think a lot of it comes down to the format war, and these companies just shot themselves in the foot. And it's just dumb.
I'm afraid so. It's so dumb.
Imagine if they were now working together in concert to show consumers the difference, saying, you know, look, we've got a format. This is it. It looks better. You know what? They would have 50%, 60%, 70% penetration instead of 20 or 30%.
Well, it's only been out for a year now. So
is that all, really?
That's really all it's been. A little more than a year, maybe.
There are not a lot of titles. That's the other thing. I think much like DVD in the early days, where you went to a Blockbuster and it was all VHS and in the corner were 12 DVDs, it's kind of like that for HD DVD right now. You don't have that many choices.
That's correct. Both formats have, at the moment, a little more than 300 titles out. They both expect to have about 400 titles out by the end of the year.
Yeah.
And 300, 400 titles compared to how many thousands are out on
Tens
DVD.
Tens of thousands, yeah.
Yeah, it's not very not very much. But, you know, again, they both pointed out that DVD itself actually had a relatively slow start in the first year, and people were wondering whether it was worth it and so on, and now look at it.
No, I was an early adopter, and I found it very frustrating that you couldn't, you know, go into the store and get DVDs. It was like,
exactly right. One thing I learned was that 65 out of the 212 television markets in the U.S. are broadcasting their local news in HD. And boy, if you want to see the difference between HD and not HD, look at local news in HD, because many times they're remote feeds if they're out on assignment.
Right.
Are not in high definition. They're in standard definition.
Yeah. And
you'll see this back and forth. Oh, my God.
What happened? It looked good. What happened?
What happened? And then you go back into the studio and it looks like super sharp and you go, oh, my God. So right there is a beautiful example or demonstration of how much better.
I've never talked to anybody who got a good HD TV and an HD DVD or a good HD signal coming in and didn't say, wow, this really is better. This is
great. That's exactly right. Yeah. And prices are coming down. We heard the Tweeter, this retailer, I don't know if they're nationwide or not, but they're around several markets. They predict that 42-inch flat panel HDTVs will be selling for $600 to $700 this coming Black Friday, which is the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And they expect HD DVD players to drop to $199 price point during the holidays.
There you go. So that might do it. And a few more blockbuster movies in HD format, and that might do it.
Right.
Well, Scott, I want to get out of here because I want to go to the movies. So you wet my whistle. A good friend, Jonathan Gaines at Universal, sent me 25 HD DVDs, and I'm just can't wait to go home and watch them.
All right.
Scott Wilkinson is a video editor. He gets to watch them every day for a living. I'm so jealous of the Perfect Vision magazine. Get your copy on newsstands. It really is a beautiful magazine, but you can also download a PDF version of it directly from their website, avguide.com. Every month for free. I think that's really cool. Very forward.
Comes out even before the print magazine comes out.
I think that's the future of print in many ways. They're smart to be doing it. Yeah. Thank you, Scott. We'll talk again next week.
My pleasure.
The great Scott Wilkinson from the Perfect Vision magazine. You know, it's funny because I have now both Blu-ray and HD DVD, but all my discs are HD DVD because I had HD DVD for a long time. And I don't, you know, I guess the advantage of having one of each is you can buy any movie, but it's ridiculous. Unless you're a tech guy, there's no reason. No reason at all. Hey, more of your calls coming up. 8888 Ask Leo. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number to call. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you've been holding off on the PS3, we were talking about how that's a pretty good way, a cheap way to buy a Blu-ray. Actually, Sony has now announced that it's going to sell PS3s down to $400 starting November 2nd. It'll only have a 40-gig hard drive, but you know my experience with the PS3 is you don't need a big hard drive. That's for down the line, I guess, when you're going to buy video or something. I don't know. The games don't need it. They save, but I don't think they require that much space. So $399 will be the cheapest Blu-ray player you can get. And you get the game machine. I think that's a pretty good deal. That's in the U.S. only. They've been doing it in Japan for a while. So Xbox now is $350, but you'd have to add an HD DVD, you'd have to play another $179. But there are $150 HD DVD players out there. So it's getting more reasonable to have both. It is. Let's go to line. I don't see her. I thought you said Nicole was on line.
Line four.
I don't see her. I see Randy. Well, let's go to line four anyway. Hello, Nicole. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well. Where are you calling from?
Excellent. I'm Shelbyville, Tennessee.
Oh, I see. Randy was your husband.
No, it's Randy with an I.
Oh, hey, Randy. See?
Hey, I need to pick your brain.
Well, pick away.
Yeah, I promise I won't hurt.
All right.
I want to buy a PDA.
Yeah.
That's a cell phone. Not a cell phone, that's a PDA.
Oh, boy, isn't that an interesting distinction?
And I'm stuck with Verizon because I got the family plan.
Yeah.
What is out there? I tried that at XV6700 and gave it back because
you
was
didn't
miserable.
Like the Envy. Okay, that's good to know.
Well, you know why? Because you couldn't hear.
It wasn't that the features of it weren't bad. Were bad. It's just that you just didn't like it. You couldn't hear it.
Well, it wasn't. You couldn't. There was no volume to it.
Okay.
It was great if you wanted to Bluetooth it, but you had to wear Bluetooth everywhere.
Yeah, I don't like that. I actually like to use my phone like a phone. So
I'd like to use that. Me too.
The interesting thing that's happened is that people aren't buying PDAs anymore because they're saying, well, I just want a smartphone. That'll give me all the PDA functionality, and then I get a phone to boot. Why carry two devices?
Well, that's what I'm trying to do is avoid two devices.
Sure.
But my dilemma is I love my Microsoft Sync because I use Outlook for my contacts and my business.
Okay.
And a lot of that stuff doesn't hook up with Microsoft.
Yeah. So you're going to want a Windows mobile phone for sure.
Yep.
Windows Mobile 6. And, they sell, I think, Verizon is not, I have to say, of all the phone companies, not the most leading edge on their phones.
But they,
that's an understatement.
Yeah. I think T-Mobile probably has the most variety. They do sell the Q, which I'm not crazy about, but that's certainly be one to look at. They also sell us the Trio 700WX. Have you looked at those two?
That. I looked at them, and
the one that's
yeah,
well, that's a, you know, that's an interesting question because you said you wanted a PDA first, but you also say I want good phone quality.
Exactly.
And so you, it's now not like we're ignoring the phone here. I think probably a good one to try. I'm not a fan of the Q, I'll be honest with you. The Trio is what it is. It's certainly the most popular smartphone out there. Well, maybe not anymore now that the iPhone's out, but it has been until then. I would take a look at the 6700. Now, this is these are HTC based handsets, and a number of Sprint sells one. I think T-Mobile sells one. It's got a full keyboard that slides out underneath, so it's very usable in terms of email and word processing and any kind of texting. It's got a real keyboard. It is running Windows Mobile. It is not the, ironically, unfortunately, not the latest Windows Mobile. It's Windows Mobile 5. Verizon's behind on this. There are newer HTC handsets like the Mogul that would, I think, be better, but this is what they've, this is the best they've got. It does have Wi-Fi, which is very handy. If you're,
that would come in good.
Yeah, if you're at home or an internet cafe somewhere with Wi-Fi access, you don't have to use a cell network for your browsing and so forth.
So it's CDMA compatible?
It is. It's a Verizon phone.
Okay, fantastic.
So
okay.
I would look at the 6700. As I said, your three choices, if you don't want to use the Envy, which you don't because you already rejected that one, your three choices are the Q, not crazy about the Q myself. And the WX, the 700, which I'm not a big fan of. Beyond of all things, everybody loves a Trio. I'm just not crazy about it. To me, it's clunky. Now this is more clunky.
I wasn't too impressed with the way it looked.
Yeah, this is more clunky. You want ugly? This looks utilitarian. It's even got a little bump for the antenna. I mean, but this is the closest thing to, I would say, a powerful, smartphone. It's not the latest. Now, everybody's saying, look at the SCHI 760, but you looked at that one, right?
Yeah.
That's the one you didn't want. See, they're not listening carefully. I'm looking at the chat room. They're saying, oh, tell her about the 760. She tried that, gang. So you don't have a whole lot of choices. That is actually the most up-to-date phone that Verizon's selling.
Really?
Yeah. Now, have you considered a BlackBerry? Have you looked at a BlackBerry? Have you considered that?
I didn't really try one yet.
It's not great for what you want because
trying to get a big screen.
Yeah, well, they're all about the same. They're not. No screens are huge. This is the 6700 is probably the biggest of the screens. The problem with the BlackBerry for you is you really want to use Windows software, like you said you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that really you should get a Windows mobile platform.
Okay.
Sorry.
I guess I have to do what I got to do. Thank you so much. Love the show.
Thank you, Randy. And yeah, if you once it comes time to change carriages. One of the reasons I use T-Mobile is because they have the best choice of phones. Sprint's getting pretty good on that, too. Sprint has a better high-speed network than T-Mobile. So Sprint might be a good one to look at. We don't get the latest phones here in the States. We don't. It's fun. The story I heard, I don't know if it's true. It sure makes a good story. It probably is that the Japanese and Scandinavian phone manufacturers don't want to give us the best phones because they say Americans don't read manuals and these phones get returned because they're too complicated. So they send us the dumb phones because we're too dumb to pay attention to the instructions. They say Japanese consumers, before they even turn the phone on, will read the manual front to back and they'll know how to use it. So they don't get the same number of returns. Could be. I don't know. It's true. We don't get the greatest and the latest. All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a very good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number. 888-827-5536. If you want to talk about technology, anything with a chip in it. Camcorders, cell phones, home theater, computers, the internet. Now, I have to apologize to Randy, our previous caller, because I wasn't listening. I actually went back and listened to the tape of what I said and what she said. She said she had this listen to the 6700, didn't like it. And, of course, that's the first thing I recommended. So I am going to go back to our chat room's recommendation because I have to agree with them. The Samsung 760, the i760, which is kind of the state of the art right now, probably the best phone offered by Verizon. It is a Windows mobile phone. It is more compact, does have a keyboard, a slide-out keyboard, but not as big a keyboard. I haven't listened. I don't know what it sounds like. So that was her complaint about the phone. But this is probably the nicest phone right now on Verizon Wireless. It's the from Samsung, the i760. All right, just to clarify that, I think I did her a disservice. Actually, the Apple iPhone is coming on strong. It's gaining on the Razr as the most popular cell phone in the U.S. Now, it's been the most popular smartphone since it came out. But now, according to Strategy Analytics, the iPhone is the fourth best-selling handset of all. It's AT&T's top-selling device. 13% of overall sales there. And according to Strategy Analytics, it could even pass the Razr if it continues at the sales trajectory. They call it the sales trajectory it's going at. It could make the iPhone the top-selling device in the U.S. over the next one or two quarters. Total sales, according to, again, Strategy Analytics, I don't know where they're getting the numbers, 1.33 million phones. Now, that's a little off. Steve Jobs predicted 10 million phones in the first year. Well, that was a pretty aggressive prediction anyway. The average iPhone buyer between 20 and 30 years old, college educated, fairly wealthy. Well, yeah. Yeah. Coming from a household with a six-figure income. Almost 25% of iPhone owners also happen between 50 and 60. A quarter of iPhone users are between 50 and 60. Actually, it turns out that's very close to the same number for the Mac user base in general. And I guess that's who's going to buy the iPhones, is Macintosh users, right? I don't know if Apple would like to, you know, that. I don't think they'll trumpet it in their ads because they're trying to be young and hip. And it's us old folks. Us old folks who are buying the Macs and the iPhones. As well as some young folks. But a quarter of them, 50 to 60. I'm in that group. Interesting. Apple now sells 1 in 12 computers in the U.S. They had a huge quarter, 8 times the industry average, according to the Gartner Group. Apple's growth rate, 37.2% this quarter. Wow. They're in the third spot for all U.S. computers sold after Dell and Gateway. I'm sorry, did I say Dell and Gateway? Sorry about that. After Dell and HP, it's Dell, HP, Apple, Toshiba, and Gateway, the top five. That's according to Gartner Group. IDC had a little bit lower numbers. Actually, a lot lower. Nevertheless, it looks like Apple's growth rate is significantly faster than the PC as an average industry. HP worldwide is number one. Worldwide, they sold between 12.8 and 13.1 million machines. Wow. Dell, 9.9 to 10.2 million globally. Apple has yet to release its figures, global figures. Apple never does as well globally as it does in the U.S. It's a U.S. brand. Mostly a U.S. brand. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Tom is on the line from Yucaipa, California. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
Hello, Leo. Enjoy your show very much.
Thanks.
I've been picking everybody's brain with this problem, and it's time to come to Leo.
Uh-oh.
I'm using a Fujitsu LifeBook notebook computer.
Nice notebook. I like them.
It's great. It's beautiful. I've had it for about a year. It's very good. Mm-hmm. I'm using a wireless Linksys wireless router. And whenever I do anything, any kind of streaming on the internet, I want to listen to your show or a video, anything, I always get a buffering. It runs for a few minutes, then it buffers and it cuts out, comes back, buffers, comes out, or it comes back. Now, I'm thinking, okay, the wireless router or bad, you know, not good reception, something like that. But I have a friend who comes over on the weekends quite often. He has a laptop, not the same brand, but of similar caliber. And he's using my wireless router, and he can stream anything he wants all night long. So
wow,
I don't know what
that's
my
interesting.
Problem
is. Now, yeah. Is his an? Well, first of all, is your router a BG router or is it an N router?
You know that I don't. I think it's a BG, but I honestly don't know.
You would probably know if it were N. Yeah, N is the newest, latest, greatest. So, I mean, that's one thing I could think of. If he's N and the router's N, and you're BG on your laptop, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. Well, you found out one very critical thing that I think people don't take into account. It's not just the bandwidth. It's also the capabilities of your computer. The computer has to receive the data in real time, unpack it, and display it. And if it can't keep up, it'll pause.
So it's probably something. And is there any kind of setting to look at for buffering, or is this strictly something that just is...
There is a setting.
Part of the makeup
there
of
is
computer.
A setting. One thing to check is, does your friend's computer take longer to start up than you do?
I'll find out. I'm out in the backyard. He's in the house. I'll ask him when I get off the phone,
here,
but I don't
know. You could do a test. Both of you try to. It's hard because you're both trying to get the same stream. That could cause problems. But here's the reason. What buffering is, you have to understand how streaming media works in the first place to understand what's going on. So if you think about it, when you're streaming video or you're streaming audio, it's just a continuous download. But the problem is, because it's video or audio, the packets of the download, unlike a file download, the packets for video and audio have to arrive in order on time. If they don't, you're gonna the player has to wait until the next packet. Once it gets the next packet, then it can play it. So what happens is almost all players do this on streaming content. They'll get ahead. And that is something you can set. It's how much they buffer ahead of time. So they buffer a minute, 30 seconds, 10 seconds, 5 seconds. That's dependent on what you think you're going to need. The more they buffer, in other words, the longer it takes to start up, all buffering means is getting ahead. So if it says, I'm going to buffer for a full minute before I start playing, that means if a packet arrives as late as 59 seconds after it's needed, it still won't stop the play. It won't stutter because it's a minute ahead, right? So, and it only has to rebuffer if it loses all of its advantage and has to start over. So one thing that could make a difference, and I would check, and that is a setting in the computer, by the way, is how long you're buffering initially.
And where can I find that?
That's a good question. It depends on the player that you're using.
This happens in Winamp, and it also happens in Windows Media Player. Both.
Yeah, I would bet that he has extended the buffer. You're both on XP?
XP Pro.
All right. Let me see if I can figure out where you set that.
Okay.
I think it's in the... I'm almost positive it's in the player itself. And it doesn't always say buffering.
Yeah. I've looked for it. I've looked in the...
It may ask you what its content... it may ask you what your bandwidth is, for instance. And if you have lower bandwidth, it'll buffer more.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing. So you may have to play with some settings. That's most likely what's gone on, is that he's just got a different setting than you do. But one way you could tell is when he first starts, you just start a stopwatch. When he first starts watching content, how long does it take to buffer that content? And then you do the same thing. And I bet you he's buffering longer, which means he has more slop. He can, you know, the same number. In other words, it may be that the same number of errors are happening to him as to you, but his system is handling it better. That would be the difference. Scotty's on the line from Orlando, Florida. Hello, Scotty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, I think I broke my Mac.
Oh, no. What happened?
And, well, it's probably okay, because the last time that I bought a Mac that I actually paid for this particular machine that I have, Bill Clinton was still in the White House. So it's probably time.
Yeah,
I think to move on. I'm running a G4 400 megahertz. I believe it was the Sawtooth model.
Oh my goodness! So,
but it's faithfully survived for what, almost 8 years now. And this morning I had a freeze and tried to reboot, and I booted into. Well, I got the startup screen with the little spinny thing and the progress bar, and then after that it went black, and I got the Darwin boot screen.
Oh my goodness. In all likelihood, what's happened is that your hard drive is either damaged or dying.
Yeah, well, fortunately, I have an external drive with an OS installed on it that I was able to boot to, and I can see everything on the internal drive. So I've
copy everything off. If you wanted to,
I'm safe and sound there. And I didn't have a lot of stuff on there that was really that deadly critical. I've got many multiple external drives with backups and backups.
Oh, you're the man, Scott. Yeah,
I've listened to your advice. You are a sage of wizard, and I have listened and I backup.
And aren't you glad? Now, here's the thing. You could, and I know you don't want to, but you could keep that Sawtooth running by putting a new hard drive in.
Well, and I probably will keep it as a secondary system for, you know, other stuff that I might use, even to run old OS 9 stuff on. So I want to keep that, but I need to decide what to get now because I haven't purchased one in so long.
All right, well, let's hang on. We'll talk a little bit about what's out there as we continue. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy.
Back on with Scotty.
Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Talking to Scotty. Finally giving up on that 8-year-old laptop. You know, laptops don't. Is it a laptop? No, that's a desktop, isn't it? The Sawtooth. Laptops don't last very long, but you know, 400 megahertz nowadays, 400 megahertz feels pretty darn slow. I think it is time to get a new computer. Are you going to get a laptop or a desktop, Scott? Which will it be, laptop or desktop?
Oh, there we go. I am looking at a. It was a desktop. It is a desktop machine. It's the Sawtooth desktop. Yeah, and yeah. I'm trying to right now decide between either probably an iMac or a Mini, and the reasoning on the Mini was because I've got all the pieces, parts, and I've got a nice 20-inch Dell flat panel widescreen monitor, and you know I can just plug and play if I get the Mini. So I'm kind of
well. You'll
back
save money. The Mini's going to be half as much.
Right, right.
And it's pretty fast. The new Minis are pretty good. At least they're finally Core 2s.
Right. Well,
the slowdown on the Mini is the slowdown on the Mini has got a laptop hard drive in it, not a full size hard drive in it. So that's a little slower.
Okay. Well, and considering that I've survived for you know almost 8 years here running on such a slow machine, and I'm running tighter
fast
on this thing, so you know a Mini is going to feel like light speed to me, no matter what.
Anything will be fast. I have both the Mini, not the newest Mini, but an old Mini, and I have the new iMac, which I just am in love with. But that's really more because it's so pretty and quiet.
Right.
It is fast. I have to say, it feels very, very slick. I have a Mac Pro as well, four-ways, you know, dual Xeons, and the new iMac seems just as fast.
Can I just come to your house and just
play with them?
Your Mac?
Come play with my Macs.
That would be wonderful. I would love that. Well, I think, you know, you get into this mindset, and this is what's kept me from buying new for so long, that whole, you know, well, there's going to be something new right around the corner all the time, and I hear talk and rumors that the Mini is going to be end of life, and there could be this, what are we talking about, the Mini Nano maybe, or you know, I get nervous, and here we are, what, a week away from the new OS being released, and what a time to think about buying a new machine.
Well, so I tell you right now, the next window of opportunity is January. That's at Macworld Expo.
As far as a new machine.
Now, typically at Macworld, they do not announce, they stick with the consumer stuff. They don't announce high-end stuff. So it's unlikely they'll announce a new Mac Pro, but they might announce a new Mini. I don't think they'll announce a new iMac because the iMacs are very new as it is.
Right.
So I'm thinking, you know, you never know with a Mini. It could go away. I speak to you as somebody who bought a Cube the day they discontinued it. You never know
love
what's going to happen. I
Long
love the
live
cube.
The cube.
Yeah, well, the cube is a little faster than your sawtooth, believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, I've been on the off ramp of the information superhighway long enough now that like I said, anything I buy today, even the slowest, a generation old machine would still kick mine in the butt many times over. So.
I think at this point the decision is really more about aesthetics than anything else. The nice thing about the iMac, all in one, gorgeous. The mini, it wouldn't be as aesthetic. You have wires. It's going to look more like a PC almost. You're going to have wires and, a PC monitor and a PC keyboard. But, it'll work just as well. I'm very happy with the mini, even the first generation mini that I have. It wasn't first generation Intel mini that I have. It's very good.
And my other big question with making this jump now, and like I said, I was able to safely pull everything off from the internal drive that's having the problems, but I've got, I almost hate to say this because it's embarrassing, but I have probably, 75,000 or more emails I've got some that were never read, and I've put them to the side. I never took care of this. I've got this giant, huge, like, multiple gigabyte mail
file. I
know how
that feels.
That I need to move all this stuff into the new system and clean it up as quickly as possible. What's the best way to do that now that I'm backing everything up? I think there are pieces of software to go from one machine to the other, but what about if you've just backed up everything and it's sitting on a hard drive? Is there a way to import all that into the new machine?
Sure. I mean, you just copy it over. Actually, the truth is that new Mini, you may want to use. I use an external hard drive to boot my Mini because the external hard drive is faster than the internal.
Really? Right.
Yeah, than the internal. So you might end up just using that external backup drive as, I think this is perfectly good idea to use it as your boot drive, in which case you won't have to do much copying at all. I use the mini internal as my backup drive and the external as my boot drive because I have a 7200 RPM external.
Okay. Yeah. And that makes perfect sense. So yeah. I guess it's just a matter of deciding which way I want to go as far as all in one or work with the pieces parts
exactly.
I have.
Frankly pretty much comes down to aesthetics at this point because I don't think there's that much difference in performance. I think you'll be pretty happy with either one.
And do I get some kind of special award for living on a 400 megahertz machine for that long? Is there a place I can go to receive a medal or something?
You have my deepest sympathy. Scotty, you're the cheapskate of the year, ladies and gentlemen, from Orlando, Florida.
Thank you. I accept this award happily, and I bow humbly before you, Mr. Laporte. You are the man.
Thank you, Scotty.
What more can I say?
Just think of all the money you've saved over the last 8 years. That's really the truth of it, is that it's time to spend. The computer industry needs you. Absolutely. Coming up in just a little bit, Dickie D. We'll give you something to spend money on. Dick D. Bartolo, our giz whiz, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He joins us with his crazy gadget of the week, the weekly giz whiz, coming up in just a little bit. Remind you that our chat room is live and happening, and 211 people in there mocking us. If you want to join the mockery, it's irc.dslextreme.com. You can go there with a browser, but if you've got a chat client, that's an even better way to do it. irc.dslextreme.com. And, of course, the website is techguylabs.com. More of your calls to come to 8888-ASK-LEO. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 get net or visit them online at dslextreme.com. It's time for the weekly Giz Whiz. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Dick D. Bartolo there. He is Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and he joins us every week with a mad gadget. Not necessarily involving Mad Magazine, but
no.
Usually it's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
I try to, as we often say about the Daily Giz Whiz, which is our daily podcast, is that we don't always succeed, but we try not to do the Xbox, and we try not to do, things that everybody's heard of.
No, For example, Ron Rosberg, the gadget guru, do those, and we do, like, the wacky stuff.
Yeah, the more offbeat things like Tooth Tunes.
Tooth Tunes? That's hard to say.
Tooth Tunes. Yeah, a while back in our Gadget Warehouse segment, we had the lollipop that played tunes through your brain.
I remember that. You'd be licking it.
Spin pop. It was called spin pop.
But you had to, like, suck pretty hard on it, and then you could hear music. And if you open your mouth, the music goes away.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we have now Tooth Tunes is music in your mouth.
Yay.
This is from Hasbro via Tiger. And Tooth Tunes, each brush has a built-in song. Let me just find something here to push the toothbrush up against.
Now, remember, it's going to sound better in your head, right?
Yes, exactly. Let me just...
It sounds like bad AM radio. Does it sound a little bit better when you're brushing your teeth?
It sounds a little bit better in your mouth. But don't forget, this is for kids, and it's a great way to get them to brush their teeth.
It's a pretty funny collection. I mean, each toothbrush has its own song, it looks like.
Yes, each toothbrush plays one song. The woman at
YMCA, the theme from Rocky.
A wild variety.
Kiss. I want to rock and roll all night. And party
right.
Every
really
day.
Really want your teeth to be clean. Get the toothbrush that does the entire score from Aida. No. Each toothbrush, the song ends and shuts the toothbrush off in 2 minutes.
Oh, I get it. That's good.
Which is what the dentists recommend as the minimum amount of time to brush. But I think for kids to get them to brush their teeth, this is a way to really do it.
And they have kids friendly songs, kids like Ali and AJ, and they've got Ashley Tisdale, stuff that kids really like.
The toothbrush, the sample toothbrush they sent me is We're All in This Together from a High School Musical.
Oh, yeah, they love that,
love that.
They actually quite a few songs. So it sounds like you wouldn't keep this forever.
No. What it is, I could not get the bottom off, and I believe the batteries are built in and not replaceable. Okay. But the spokesperson at the toy Christmas preview said that the batteries and everything is designed to last about 3 months, which is what doctors recommend is to replace a toothbrush every 3 months.
Now, I have to say it's tough to get younger kids, 10, 11, 9, 8, to brush their teeth. So this is a really good idea.
Yeah, and it's under $10. My guess is once the big chains get them, you'll probably find
six
it more
bucks,
like
yeah.
eight or nine
yeah,
bucks.
Yeah.
But a great stocking stuffer, a fun thing for young kids.
I want some.
Yeah. You ain't getting mine, pal. You ain't getting mine.
I want. Let's see. If you've got Queen, We Will Rock You. I want
I have
that for my
all night.
Oh,
by
I like
Kiss.
That.
Yeah.
This is really good. It's from Hasbro. Tooth Tunes, music in your mouth. It's not hi-fi.
No. Oh, no. There's one coming out from Bose, but it's $4,000.
3 months and out.
Yeah, that's right. That's
now, we want to remind you that Dick, of course, besides doing the weekly GizWiz on this show, and he does his daily GizWiz podcast on my Twit network, TWIT.TV, also is Mad Magazine's maddest writer for the last 4 decades now. He's been writing great stuff for me. Ooh. In fact, I know a lot of your stuff is in that new Star Wars book.
Yeah, it's really neat. It's called Mad About Star Wars, 30 Years of Classic Parodies.
The parody is strong.
What's neat about
one.
That, it's written by Jonathan Bresman, who, before he came to Mad, worked for George Lucas.
Oh, really?
And one day I was in the conference room and Jonathan is in there. And I said, what are you watching on television? He had a reel that he brought over from Lucas. He was actually did some running through fields dressed as Jar Jar Binks so they could get an idea of how this costume would look.
Not good, I take it. You know, they should have looked at that and said, yeah, let's not do Jar Jar Binks.
That's right. Oh. Right. Well, No, I think that's instead of sending in a resume, I think he sent that in. And I think John Ficarra said, oh, a man running through the field dressed as Jar Jar Binks. I think he's perfect.
Oh, you're hired.
of Mad Magazine. So what they've done is they've gathered almost everything that Mad's done on Star Wars and put it in one book. But they've done little pullouts. The actual book is a little bigger than a copy of Mad Magazine. And on the side, they have little stories about how jokes came about or a little inside stories about, you know, Mad getting sued by Lucas's attorneys. They actually have a copy of the letter that George Lucas sent Mad, complimenting Mort Drucker and myself, thinking the satire on Star Wars was so funny.
Oh, that's neat. So he doesn't mind. George doesn't mind. He likes it.
No, he likes it. And as a matter of fact, there's a very flattering foreword in the book by George Lucas saying that Mad was helped pioneer his thought of looking at, you know, organized religion, not religion, but ads and politics, looking at everything with a question. And
he grew up reading Mad Magazine.
He grew up reading Mad. In his foreword, he says that he also spends a lot of time protecting Mad from his own attorneys, which is very,
very
funny.
George, we got to sue these sons of guns.
George, look at what they did. They didn't take
done,
off.
George.
Look at, they're using characters just George. Like the ones in your movie.
It's okay, man, just chill. It's cool. Yeah. Mad
I happen to know that George Lucas has bought a lot of the original artwork that Mort Drucker did.
Oh, of course.
He's a big Mort Drucker. Yeah, I know.
I mean, Mort's and the best.
As a matter of fact, in his foreword, George Lucas said when he did one of his first movies, he was wondering who to hire to do the ad for the American Graffiti poster.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, oh, I have to get Mad's Mort Drucker. And he did. So
did he really?
So look for it. It's called Mad About Star Wars by Jonathan Bresman, and it just came out two or three days ago. So very it's cool. At bookstores
everywhere. Dick, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I'm going to make sure to keep my teeth brushed with the tooth tunes. And we'll see you.
If you buy them, get two tooth tunes.
Easy for you to say. If I were missing my two front teeth, I'd have two tooth tunes.
Two tooth tunes.
So we'll see you on Monday for the Daily Gizwiz, and we'll see you next week right here on the Tech Guy Show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you, and I'll be here.
He will. Dick DiBartolo. Let's get back to the phones. What do you say? We got Danny on the line from Greenberg, New Jersey. Hello, Danny. Leon Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Danny.
How's it going?
It's going great. How you doing?
Hi. Good. How are you?
I think we're in a loop, Danny.
Can you hear me?
We're stuck in a recursive loop. Yes. What can I do for you today?
I have a question about recording a podcast using Skype and a FireWire mixer. I'm looking at the Mackie Onyx 1640 right now.
Good choice.
Yeah, and basically what I want to do is I tested it out already. It works. I want to have each person call into a separate Skype account. So one person would call into, let's say, podcast_Nick.
Right.
Or podcast_Matt. And then that person's audio would come into that mixer on a separate channel.
Would work fine as long as you have a computer for each Skype account.
Well, I tried using multiple sound cards in one computer.
Yeah, you need a separate computer for each Skype account.
Oh, well, I found a way to run multiple Skypes on one computer.
And get separate channels out of each?
Yeah, I sent each one to a different sound card.
Oh, good. Excellent.
So now
you need a very powerful computer and a lot of bandwidth.
Yeah, I have pretty good bandwidth.
How's it working? Is it sound okay?
Well, I don't have anything yet, so I can't really test it. I haven't bought the mixer. My question is really, well, if I use it to record over the FireWire, can I still use the aux sends so that I can send audio back to the people who are on Skype?
Yeah, that's called mix minus, and that's exactly how we do it.
Okay.
That's it. You got the idea. What's your podcast going to be about, Danny?
Well, we did our first two episodes, and it's basically technology news, but kind of with some humor to it.
Great. Where is it? What's the address? Let's plug it.
www.technopod.org, TechnoPod.org.
Yeah, good luck. I think that's great. This is the issue. It's an interesting marriage of old style technology, a mixer, and new style technology, your computer and Skype. And Skype, which is a great tool for podcasters because you make free calls. You know, you just heard Dick DiBartolo. He was on via Skype. I mean, it sounds the quality is really good if you have enough bandwidth. But it is a problem when you're doing a lot of different callers, the way we do it on Twit, my flagship netcast, is that we just have a conference call and there's only one channel for all the callers. But what Danny wants to do, which is would be great, is separate them out each into their own channel. That certainly would be a better way to control it. So then if somebody's really noisy or breathing or chewing donuts, you can just edit them out. That's a nice setup. I think it'll work. Grant, Vancouver, British Columbia, calling on the iPhone from Canada. Grant, how do you do it?
Good, thank you, Leo. I just got my iPhone a few weeks ago, and I had a BlackBerry Curve before that, and I'm just knowing, listening to you on the podcast, that you have...
I went the opposite direction, didn't I? Yeah,
I went back to a BlackBerry, and just I know one of your reasons was the third-party apps, and just with Apple announcing that they are looking to go to native third-party apps, does that change in your kind of decision?
Well, let me make it clear. I didn't throw my iPhone away or sell it or get rid of it. It's sitting right here, right next to the BlackBerry. I use both. I've used two phones for years because, you know, part of my job is to review a variety of different phones. If I didn't have to, I might stay with the iPhone. I think some of the bloom has worn off the iPhone for me, and I think it's just because as you get used to it, you realize... You know, it's like a love affair. You spend some time with it, and pretty soon you start to see the flaws. They start to emerge. It's a little big. It's a little heavy. It's a great iPod. I like it for that, and I continue to use it for an iPod. I just don't use it for a phone all that much anymore. I think it's huge that Apple finally said, yes, we're going to let people develop software for it. Won't be out till February. Well, actually, won't even be out till much later, because that's when the kit comes out that people could start developing with. So I think we'll wait and see on that. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8880. I didn't mean to scare you. I scared the musicians out of here. They all ran. 8888, ask Leo. Let me talk briefly about the iPhone. I stand by what I said day one on the iPhone. Which is, it's a very cool gadget. If you're one of the people who has to have the latest, greatest stuff, of course, get it. My advice for everybody else was, if you'll remember, you can play back the tapes. Don't get it until version 2. And I stand by that advice. I think what it's clear now, here we are, we're sitting, the iPhone came out 4 months, five, 6 months. What is it? It was June 29th, right? So it's 3.5 months ago. What's very clear is it was rushed out, that the iPhone was a beta product. The iPhone operating system was far from done. Apple should probably have waited a year to ship it. But, you know, for economic reasons, business reasons, whatever, they released it. And that was my initial impression. And I think as time has gone by, it's become very clear that's the case. So don't buy the beta version. Get it when it comes to this. The next generation, and I'll let you know when it comes out, but I think the next generation will be light years ahead. I'll give you a perfect example. If you look at the iPhone, the touch interface, the screen, the form factor, it just begs to have games on it. Just little portable games. Every phone in the world can play games. Even a Razer can get games. The iPhone can't. Why not? Because Apple's not ready. You can bet Apple's thinking, oh, we'd be selling millions of dollars of games right now if we only had some to sell. It's not ready. So I'm sure that that'll happen. And I think probably around this time next year, I'll be sitting here saying, now the iPhone is really a great phone. I think there'll be different form factors. It might be a flip iPhone. Who knows? But this is just one product. If you look at the first iPod, it had a long way to go before it got to the iPod of today. And I think that's where we are with the iPhone. Great news that Apple finally is relenting. I think they probably always planned to. They just didn't have the horsepower to do it yet. It's great news that they're going to let third-party apps on it. It needs them desperately. Again, every smartphone in the world except for Apple allows third-party applications. And, you know, after a while, when the honeymoon is over, you start to say, golly, I wish I had a to-do list on here, or I wish I had a chat application on here, or wish I could put ringtones of my own on here, all of those things. And that's, I think, something that I hope will be remedied by third-party applications. So, I didn't ask Grant if he was using a hacked iPhone. I'll tell you one thing I've learned. I'm not going to hack my iPhone anymore. I had one, you know, that I left pristine, and one that I hacked. Never did get it bricked, but I tell you, Apple's very clear now. They've made it very clear. Don't mess with it. Okay, I'm not going to. But that means the iPhone is what it is. I'm putting it aside because, frankly, it's not enough. I want more. BlackBerry's great. Brent, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brent. Are you there, Brent? Oh, wait a minute. I lost. For some reason. Brent is on line four. Hey, Brent.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Hey, I have a PC, and I'm running Vista 32-bit, and I have 4 gigs of RAM in there, but it's only registering 2.5 gigs.
Okay.
And I understand if I upgraded to 64-bit, it would start using all the RAM.
No, not so.
Not so?
Not so.
So why is it only registering the 2.5 if I have 4?
Could be a variety of reasons. Windows Vista, you're on Vista or XP?
Vista.
Yeah, Windows Vista can see 4 gigs. That's its limit, but it can see 4 gigs. It's the motherboard, probably, or the way you added the RAM. Are the RAMs in is the RAM in matched set pairs?
I don't know. It came factory installed.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. So the factory installed 4 gigs, said we're selling you a 4 gig machine, but you don't see the 4 gigs.
No.
Well, I'd call the factory, say, what the heck? I paid for 4 gigs. Where are my 4 gigs?
Okay. And then we're also running 2 graphics cards in SLI mode.
Oh, that's nice.
786 gigs.
Yeah, that's great. Now, Vista 64-bit allows you to exceed 4 gigabytes.
Okay, so there's no reason that I shouldn't be seeing the whole 4?
Not that there could be many reasons, but it's not Windows. It's likely the motherboard. It could be something wrong with it for all I know. I mean, that's why I would you paid for 4 gigs. They shipped a machine they thought had 4 gigs in it. I don't understand what's going on. Where call them up. Where's my extra gig and a half? I only see 2.5. There are all different reasons why you might not see all the memories in some machines. Not all. You have to add memory in pairs because it's interleaving. Sometimes a motherboard can only see a certain amount of RAM. Could be bad RAM. But in this particular case, I don't think it's because you're using 32-bit Vista. 64-bit Vista, you know, it's an interesting question. Should I go to 64-bit? My motherboard is 64-bit. My microprocessor is 64-bit. I have 64-bit RAM. Why am I not using 64-bit operating system? I don't see a huge benefit to going to 64-bit, and there are issues. If you have compatibility issues with Vista now, wait till you go to Vista 64. It's much worse. Drivers have to be rewritten. They have to be certified. There's a whole nother thing going on. Now, I think it's been out almost a year now, so it's settling down. It's usable. Paul Thurrott, who does the Windows Weekly podcast with me on the Twit Network, actually talked about this specifically this week. And it's his opinion, I think, that Vista 64 is much more compatible than it was. It's much more usable. But if 32 bits working for you, there's no compelling reason. Just because you have a 64-bit processor, not necessary. On the Mac side, by the way, Leopard is 64-bit finally. All 64-bit. Now, some applications won't be, but I'll tell you the big difference between a 64-bit operating system and a 32-bit operating system is how big the chunks of data are that it can process. And unless you're doing some unusual things, you don't really need 8 bytes at a time. 4 bytes at a time is plenty, and how much memory it can address. And so that's the biggest difference. Now, most people, 4 gigs is plenty of memory. But if you're one of those people, I want 32 gigs of memory, I want 64 gigs of memory, well, then you will want to go to a 64-bit operating system. And that's really who 64-bit is for. It's for high-end people operating on big chunks of data who have a lot of needs for that high, you know, that that memory address space. All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more of your calls in just a little bit. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I guess he could have had Windows Starter Edition. Can't believe they have 1 gigabyte. GoToMeeting Web Conferencing, everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click the orange Try It Free button, use my name, Leo, as the promo code. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, that's my number. We're talking about tech today. That could be Mac, PC, Internet, Linux, but it also could be cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players. Very interesting question ending the last hour. And I want to correct what I said and give you more information because I've done a little research, and thanks to the folks in the chat room, we've had a conversation back and forth on it. Our caller had a machine that he'd installed 4 gigabytes of it came with 4 gigabytes of RAM on it, but he only saw 2.5. And his question was, if I install a Vista 64-bit, will I see all 4 gigs? And I want to correct my answer. In many cases, perhaps most cases, you will see more RAM. And it all comes down to the way a computer handles the memory address space. So I'm going to get a little geeky here on this. But he has 4 gigabytes of RAM in his system, but he can't see it all. The computer can't address it all because Windows needs some of that address space. It has a total of 4 gigabytes of address space. That means that there's 4 gigabytes of spots it can see. It uses some of that address space for the video RAM. He said he had 784 megs of video RAM. So there goes 784 megs. It can't address both that video RAM and memory. It doesn't have enough address spaces for it. All the address spaces, everything can only total 4 gigs. So it has to say, oh, I'm going to take some of that RAM away and use it to address video memory. Same thing with a PCI bus. That might be another 5, 12 or more, maybe even a gig. So what happens, it whittles it down, and that's what's happening. And it really does depend on the computer you're using and your configuration. But in fact, now just looking at my 4-gig machine running Windows Vista 32-bit, and in fact, I only see 3 gigs of RAM. Same thing. This is a Crossfire system. Same problem. So the nice thing about having a larger address space, as a 64-bit operating system does, is you can use more of that address space, you know, and say, okay, well, I'm going to have video RAM mapped to a higher address space. I'm going to have your PCI bus mapped to another address. So it doesn't take up any of that 4 gigs. So in most cases, yes, if you go to Vista 64, you should be able to see all 4 gigs. Should be, because there are other factors, your motherboard, your hardware, and so forth. But yes, so it isn't the manufacturer's problem. Although, frankly, since they sold you a 4-gig machine, they probably should have said, and you won't see all 4 gigs unless you put Vista 64 on it. The good news, if you buy Vista Ultimate, it comes with a disc for Vista 64. And you can even download Vista 64 and try before you buy. You don't activate it. Just you get, 30 days before you have to activate it. So try and see, do I see all 4 gigs now? And you might. Harshnader says in the chat room, try a program like CPU-Z to see exactly what your system is seeing before you do it and after you do it, after the upgrade, just to see if you're getting all of the memory you deserve. So a correction there. Thanks to the folks in the chat room. And we'll put a link to a really good article on this from VistaClues.com that explains this in, I think, very well in great detail and uses examples from a variety of people. It's one of these things that Microsoft kind of documents, kind of doesn't document, and really we have to all kind of get together and put our heads together and figure out what's really going on. It's not obvious. Richard's in Long Beach. Hello, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I'm looking for a laptop probably under about $800 that my daughter and I will be sharing.
Okay.
Okay, and mostly just PowerPoint, word processing, internet. I'm looking mostly for the best maker. Let's put it that way.
I'll tell you my favorite right now. Let me just see if they've got it down to that price range. Is the Dell XPS 1330. I just love this. It's widescreen 1330. Beautiful, beautiful looking laptop. They've really done a really nice job in design. But I have to see if they're selling it as low as that. That's a $800 is it's a little more than that, unfortunately. I think the lowest 1330 is $1,200.
How about Toshiba?
Yeah, Toshiba makes a good laptop. Dell does make, by the way, $800 laptops that are very good.
Okay, I'm a big HP fan, but you know, right, that price range usually I don't know. I just like the HPs. So.
Yeah, well, you could take a look. I'm sure they have an $800 laptop. Everybody does in the Windows side because that's kind of a – people want that $600 to $800 PC. Oftentimes, right. It's not a great PC. You know, you kind of get what you pay for. But let's see. The lowest price Dell laptop, the Inspiron 1500, is $499.
Right.
You probably could take a look at that and configure it with a little bit more RAM and a little bit more processor. And
right. That's what I was looking for, like processor and battery life.
Yeah. Well, you're going to get Vista, unfortunately, because that's what they're selling these days. You could probably get XP, but you're going to get Vista. And I think that's fine on a new machine. With Vista, though, right. You want to have 2 gigs of RAM.
Okay.
The 1500s use an AMD Turion chip, which is a fine chip. Nothing wrong with it. I'm a bigger fan of the Intel Core 2s, but that's where you're saving money. And I don't think that that's a bad place to save money. I don't think that's going to make a huge
difference.
Yeah, I
like the Core 2s also. Yeah.
I'm a bit more of a fan of the Core 2, but the low-end laptops are often going to be running AMD processors.
Okay. One other question that my daughter and I actually had a little debate over. What's the difference between a negative R and a plus R on a DVD?
None. It's just a different spec.
Okay.
Who said none? Okay. What did you say, Gary? What was your answer?
Mine?
Yeah.
I'm Richard.
I'm sorry, Richard. What was your answer?
Yeah. I've been looking, like at Sam's Club, I've been looking at the difference, and it says that one transfers, the other one doesn't.
No.
That's what they say on the stickers.
There's CDRW.
Okay.
I'm sorry, DVD-RW. You want read-write if you're going to reuse it. But if you're just burning to it once, there's dash and plus, and they're slightly different specifications. It used to be that, you know, they would have fights over who's more compatible with DVD players. That doesn't even matter anymore because all the DVD players make sure that they play with both.
Right, because, see, I'm on my third generation. I went from, you know, a camera to a videotape. And now I put it all onto, you know, the DVDs.
Right.
And now I'm worried about going to the HD now.
So. Yeah, yeah. No, I'd say dash or plus, it doesn't matter. Most burners do both. But if you found a burner that was a good deal that only did one, doesn't matter. Doesn't make any difference. It really doesn't. Dash and plus are so close now. Now, when you get to HD DVD, then you got the Blu-ray versus HD DVD, and that's a whole nother matter. They're very, very different. Now let's talk to Gary in Irvine. Hi, Gary. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
Great. How are you today?
I'm good. We've talked before. We do a video podcast, The Drift Zone.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got a little problem brewing here, and it all revolves around the iTouch.
Okay.
Which is beautiful, but of course, Apple, in their infinite wisdom, does not support Flash. And while our video podcast is downloadable, like from iTunes and some other aggregators, we also do on our own site, as well as all of our affiliate sites, a Flash player so people can view them.
Yeah.
But, of course, I went down excitedly to my local Apple store here to look at how my video podcast looked on the new iTouch screen.
And it doesn't.
And it raised the question, and we do a lot of sampling of our audience, and we know that a lot of our audience looks at our show on these portable devices.
Right.
And I expect that as time goes on, more and more of those are going to be the iTouch. So what I'm looking for is the best and smallest file size representation for a non-Flash viewer.
That you would embed on the website?
Yeah.
Well, you know, even Flash is going to H.264, and I think that that's ultimately going to be the... one format to rule them all in terms of video. The problem with it is it requires QuickTime.
Yeah.
But any player, anything that isn't Flash is going to require something. So it's either going to require Windows Media Player, it's going to require QuickTime or something. And there will be a percentage of your audience that won't have it.
See, that was a nice thing about Flash.
Yeah, everybody has it. Yeah. I use a Flash player on my website as well. This is a very good example of where Apple let us down on the on both the iPhone and the Touch, and I think it really is. I think they probably intend to put Flash in there. They didn't get around to it. These products are first generation, and they're not fully baked. So, but it is an issue for people like you, and I guess for me too, who want to distribute content on a web page. You've got great video content. You want people to, frankly, that's how people see stuff. They go there and they see it and they sample it, and it's much easier for them to do that. If you make them download a 27 megabyte file, that's a barrier to entry.
27? God, I wish we had 27.
Are they bigger than that?
Oh, we typically, well, we really had to bite the bullet earlier in the year. They were running up to 100, 120, 240 yeah. megabyte, our long show.
So they got a podcast that's not so bad because it downloads in the background. People don't pay attention to it.
Yeah, we at least, we finally put a capper on the thing. Our shows, we try to keep them under 8 minutes now, and our file sizes have come back down to about 40 to 50 megs
yeah,
as a rule. But, I mean, and it certainly has, our servers don't groan quite the way they used
right.
to. On show day, so
I just don't know what short of Flash, I don't know what the best format is. My favorite, yeah, I would put QuickTime on there, and I would put H.264. The nice thing about H.264, as you know, I'm sure, is that you can hint it to say, you know, this is for this bandwidth, use this quality for this bandwidth,
right.
use that quality, and it's very scalable. So if somebody's on a cell phone and they're on an edge network and they don't have much bandwidth, they at least can see something. And if they're right. on a high-quality Wi-Fi network, they can see a much better quality video. I think that's a real advantage. I think it's one of the many reasons you're going to see H.264 dominate.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention one other thing, and we were really made, in addition to our podcast, we do something we call the live blog. And the live, and anybody out there wanting to know about the power of blogging, the live blog was an afterthought we did after at the very first event, which essentially...
Hurry up, because we're running out of time.
Oh, okay, contextual representation. Anyway, we've had 750,000 hits to our live blog.
What's the website for that? It's thedriftzone.com.
Thedriftzone.com.
All right, we'll look at the live blog. Great to talk to you again, Gary. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. If you'd like to talk high tech. Coming up, Steve Gibson, our security guru. He's going to talk about something I didn't know about, a security flaw, maybe not a flaw, but certainly an issue that you should be aware of if you use Firefox to keep track of your passwords. You want to stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, Sherry is on the line from Murrieta, Georgia. Hello, Sherry. Leo Laporte here. I'm sorry, Murrieta, California.
Yeah, it's California. Hi, yep. Leo.
Great. How are you?
I'm fine. Hey, considering buying a Nokia tablet, the N800, and they are just now releasing the N810.
Yeah, the 810 just came out. Looks beautiful.
It does. My main concern is that my husband and I travel a lot, and I would like to be able to use it to Skype.
Well, it's Wi-Fi. I'm pretty sure it does do Skype. It is the real issue would be the bandwidth's there. The real issue would be is the processor fast enough to do this Skype? And it's funny. I had a 770, and I remember that Skype worked on that. I believe yes, you can use VoIP on these. So yes,
okay.
It would work. It would work that way. Boy, this new 810 looks really slick.
It does because it has that pull-out keypad opposed to having to use the little.
Yes. Yes.
But my question is considering they're coming out with the 810, it's going to have other software that this one doesn't have. Do you think it's going to be downloadable to the 800 opposed to having to purchase the 810?
Good question. I would wait for the 810. If you're really in the market for this, I would absolutely wait for the 810. I think it's a huge jump, just having the keyboard alone. It says that the 8... Let's see. Yes, it does say that they're going to update the new Linux operating system. The OS 2008 will be updatable to the 800. So you will be able to move it, which means you will be able to use all the same software, all the support will all be there. In fact, I believe it comes with Skype. So you'll be able to run it right there. And now I've never used it for Skype. I have no idea what kind of quality you're going to get.
I Skype from home on my PC.
I love
but
Skype.
I've never tried it on a handheld.
Yeah.
When you're walking down the street, does it pop up that there's a Skype Wi-Fi available?
Yeah, as long as Wi-Fi is available, you can have it set to notify you, or you can have it, do it manually. Once you get on the Wi-Fi, I wouldn't move around too much. I'd sit down. But you should be able to make that call, and it comes with a headphone with microphone, so you really should be set there. Yeah, it's essentially a cell phone minus the cell capability.
So can I use it as a cell phone also?
It doesn't work on the cell networks, but you could use it as a essentially as a phone using the VoIP capability. Yeah. So you could use, it comes with Gizmo and Skype. You could use them to make outbound calls to telephones. So in a way, as long as you're near a Wi-Fi connection, you'll be able to do that. Now, it doesn't support the 3G networks, at least not in the States. So you're not going to be able to use the cell network for VoIP. But you, as long as you're near a Wi-Fi, yes, you'll be able to. I don't know when the 810 is coming out. Actually, I think that's the one, if you can wait. They've announced it. Let me see if I can find a date on this thing. It doesn't say. Nokia today introduced the Nokia N810 Internet Tablet. Availability. Estimated retail price, mid-November, be $479. It's a, you know, it's a kind of in-between device. It's got a camera, got a keyboard now. Yay, hallelujah. Browser is Opera. Runs on Linux. It's an interesting device. For a certain person, somebody like our caller, if you travel a lot and you really want that capability of surfing without carrying a laptop around or making voice over the internet calls without a laptop, this might be a good choice. Tim, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hey, Tim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Tim.
Me and my wife are team truck drivers.
Oh, hey, isn't that neat?
We get our internet connection through a Sprint card.
Okay.
And we recently purchased a second laptop. How do we get both laptops to receive the Sprint signal?
Well, you can do internet sharing. So you're using Windows, I presume.
Yes, we are on Windows.
So what you'll do is you'll turn on the internet sharing on Windows. And it'll say, well, what's the internet device? And you'll say, it's my Sprint card. And then she'll have to, it gets a little tricky because you're going to have to use Wi-Fi, yes? You could connect,
okay,
you could connect with Ethernet if you both have Ethernet and you're sitting right next to each other. You probably want to use Wi-Fi, in which case you'll set up a Wi-Fi network on your Windows PC that is what they call ad hoc, not infrastructure. Infrastructure is where you have a Wi-Fi access point. So you've turned your laptop into an internet access point, a Wi-Fi access point. And she should see your laptop and be able to join it as she would any internet access point. And any internet connectivity you have, she will have. In this case, it'll be through the Sprint.
Okay, we had considered getting a router, but we wasn't sure what we needed to do. And
you can get routers. They make routers that you can actually put the Sprint card in. They're kind of expensive. They're a few hundred dollars. But essentially, this is what you're doing with your laptop. You're turning your laptop into a router.
Okay.
Sound cool, huh?
Are you going to put any notes on your show?
We will. I'll see if I can find a link on how to do this on the web. And if I can, I will put it in the show notes for you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Automatic secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and he is Steve Gibson, the security guy. Joins us on the show every week to talk about security issues. And this is one I think hits home for everyone who uses the browser Firefox. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Leo. Great to be back with you again. Yeah, you know, a lot of people use Firefox because they know from listening to you and me and listening to you so much, you know, you're a real Firefox fan.
Although,
and for good reasons.
You've always been an IE fan and you know how to lock down IE. And now I've come around because IE 7, especially on Vista, is now, I feel, every bit as secure as Firefox.
I mean, I agree. I think Microsoft has, you know, gotten the clue, and they've really made the changes required to make it much more secure.
Yeah.
But we do see a high adoption level of Firefox users, especially among those people who want more security. Something I wanted to bring to the attention of your listeners is a potential privacy hole in Firefox, which they may have exposed themselves to just sort of inadvertently and for reason of convenience. Firefox allows you to store the username and password for sites that you log into frequently to make it easier to go back to them and log in, you know, Amazon and your bank and whatever. It turns out that is protectable by a master password, which some people don't set because it's a bit of a hassle. Every time you launch Firefox, you need to give it this master password to prove that you're you. As a consequence, some people don't. It turns out that under the Tools menu, if you click Options, and then there's a button there that's labeled Show Passwords. If you do that, it shows you initially just the site and the username, but not the actual matching password. But on that dialog, there's another button that says Show Passwords. If you press that one, then a little dialog pops up and says, "Are you sure?" And it's like, "Well, yeah." So you click that. Now you've got the keys to the kingdom. You've got the URL of the site in question, and your username and your password shown in clear text right there for anybody to see. So I wanted to make sure that people knew that feature, unquote, was there in Firefox, that unless they protect their Firefox startup with the master password that would then require you to enter that every time, anybody can come along and look at your complete username and actual password list, write them down, or notice, for example, that you're always using the same password, in which case they could guess what your password is anywhere else, mm-hmm. because it's probably going to be the same.
So, it's funny because and most people will want their browser to remember their passwords. So I use that on Firefox, and I've always set this master password. It's a little bit of a pain because you first launch Firefox, you have to type in your master password. But I figure that way, nobody, if they're browsing around with my Firefox, will accidentally or intentionally log into sites without my permission.
That's a very good point. I mean, it does that convenience is also power.
Yeah.
And you've given that power to your browser to act on your behalf.
Yeah. So, but I had no idea they could browse all my passwords. That's pretty terrible. So definitely turn that on. How about IE? Does IE securely store passwords?
IE does not natively have a password storage option.
Oh.
So there are plugins and add-ons, but IE itself doesn't do that.
You know what I've been using and I love, and it is, I mean, you want a really secure way to do this. We've mentioned RoboForm AI before, and I think RoboForm is a really great product. They now have a version of RoboForm that goes on a USB key and stores all your passwords on the USB key encrypted. So, I put it on a U3, one of those U3 auto mounting keys. So whenever I'm at a Windows machine, wherever I am, I just plug in this key. It's on my, you hear my keychain rattling because it's on my keychain. I just plug it in. All my passwords are on there encrypted. I need a master password to get in there. As I'm surfing around, whatever browser I use, if I enter a password, it's RoboForm says, "Do you want to remember that?" And I say, "Yes." And then it stores it on this key. So I always have it with me. It's kind of a neat way to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a great solution. Yeah. And, the good news is we're seeing a real growth in the appreciation for the importance of managing our online identities.
Yes.
Because, increasingly we're doing much more online. And I think the future is only going to be more that way.
Steve Gibson, great to talk to you. If you like security, you want to know more about security, you want to become an expert, the way to do it is to listen to Security Now. We've done now 117 episodes over the last 2 years, covering just about every aspect. And we get pretty geeky, I confess. Usually an hour a week. It's on Thursdays, and you can listen to it absolutely free. We're on iTunes. Just look for Security Now. Or you can go to Steve's site, grc.com, download a copy there. Or subscribe at my website, twit.tv. It's part of the Twit family of podcasts, twit.tv. And don't forget Steve's great SpinRite, the ultimate file or disk recovery and maintenance utility. Just really, I recommend it on the show all the time. This is the guy who wrote it, folks. Steve Gibson. It's not free. It's $80, but boy, is it it's money well spent. If you've got a hard drive that's dying, you can recover it. If you want to make sure your hard drives, you know, don't die, you can use it to maintain them. GRC.com. Steve, we'll talk again next week.
Righto.
Let's get back to the phones. What do you say? 8888 Ask Leo. Chuck is on the line from Cerritos, California. Hey, Chuck, Leo here.
Hey, Leo.
What can I do for you today?
I'm having a little trouble, not technical. My grandson is going to school, or he's supposed to be going to school in Israel, and he's doing some traveling around, and I've been trying to locate a wireless internet card for him so when he takes his laptop, he's able to access the internet.
Oh.
I've emailed AT&T several times. They haven't replied. I just spoke to a rep at Verizon today, and they said they have it for within the United States, but nothing internationally.
Right.
I found a company in New Jersey, ATS, I think it is, and they said they do have something. It rents for about $88 a month, and it's $15 per gigabyte, maybe. I forget how much it is. But they said they won't have any available for another 3 or 4 weeks. Do you know where I can get something just to plug into his laptop and so he can get internet access?
Here's the issue. The high-speed internet 3G networks are on different frequencies in Israel than they are here in the States. So that's why the card that you would get here wouldn't work. So what I would do, but I can tell you that the carriers in Israel do, in fact, he's only going to be in Israel?
Yes.
Okay. They do, in fact, I'm pretty sure, I know that around Europe you can buy these same exact cards that we get here, they're like the Sprint or the Verizon 3G cards that you plug into your laptop and give you high-speed cell access. So I would imagine that they do in Israel. They certainly do in Europe. What I would probably do is find out, contact the carriers in Israel, because he's going to have to probably get it there so that it's compatible with the stuff that's there.
Yeah, I've gone online, and the websites that I found, they're all in Hebrew.
There you go.
So that didn't help me out any. But you have any suggestions of which companies?
I don't know enough about it to know. So I'll tell you, but you know what's good is I'm sure that we have people listening who have done this, and they are probably just champing at the bit to tell you. So
okay. So
keep listening. We'll put it in the show notes if we don't hear from them before the end of the show. We only have about 20 minutes left. Keep listening, though. If somebody calls in, 8888 Ask Leo, we're looking for one of those, you know, those 3G cards that you plug into your laptop via PC card or USB that allows you to have high-speed internet anywhere you can get a cell signal. But we want to have one that works in Israel, not here in the States. And I'm sure we could find one for you. Just keep listening, Chuck. That'd be irc.dslextreme.com if you want to go there to tell us. Or you can call 8888 Ask Leo. Which Israeli phone company sells it? How much does it cost? What do you recommend? Does it work? So forth and so on. It may be that, you know, they don't have them in Israel. You know, it's very, you know, it's, and it's very specific to a region. They do have them in Europe. I'm sure they have them in Asia. Well, I don't know if they have them in Israel, but I would expect so. But you never know. You never know. So we'll just, I'll keep my eye peeled in the chat room, and we'll look for we'll look for a call if you've got an answer. Jim is on the line from Dana Point, California. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, sir. Hey, I bought about almost 2 months ago a Fujitsu laptop, and I had ordered a gateway prior. They weren't able to deliver in time, so it was a last-minute deal. I bought this. It seems to be doing it more. I'll have a couple Internet Explorer windows open. I won't be doing anything real... Well, I would figure I'm draining a lot, but suddenly the screen with a blue background and little, you know, almost distortion, white distortion across it comes up. It stays like that for maybe 10 seconds, and then the computer shuts down and reboots.
No.
I get a little error message, and it says, A Windows Vista, which was killing me, had an unexpected stoppage. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's a blue screen, isn't it?
It's blue with like a white lines of white distortion in it.
Yeah, but there's no text on the blue. But it sounds like what's happened is the video card has crashed, and when it that's what it takes, by the way, to bring down XP or Vista is a hardware crash or a driver crash. I think the first thing I would do is I would see if you can get an updated driver, video driver for the computer.
Okay, and just as a small side note, my wireless card in the thing seems to constantly drop the signal, and I would say maybe it's where I'm at, but I'm in a room with people with other computers. They're not having that problem. My overall question to you is, and I'm not familiar with Fujitsu, am I going to be experiencing problems like that? Is this not...
Well, it could be you got... Look, Fujitsu's fine. It could be you got a lemon.
Okay.
And that could very well be. So you may, and in that case, you will. You're going to have all sorts of other problems. I like Fujitsu laptops. I think they're very good laptops. So,
it seems to be working fine. Other than this,
It's not working very well if this is happening.
No. And if I have some stuff running, I lose everything.
Yeah. I would absolutely. I'd call Fujitsu. It's still under warranty. It's possible that a simple software fix, a new driver for your video, maybe a new driver for the wireless card too, will solve the problem. It could be just that simple. Or it could be that there's a physical hardware issue with the motherboard or the video card, in which case nothing you do will fix it. And Fujitsu's got to come step up to the plate and fix it. There are lemons in the world, and every manufacturer makes them. And it could be you got one. But I'd first try the software. I think you could probably fix it with that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. I'm looking at old articles. This isn't up to date, but there's a press release from Lucent, the company that makes a lot of those high-speed internet access cards that you put in your laptop or you put in, the USB ones. And they are selling, they announced this 3 years ago, the Merlin for use in Israel. So I think that there are probably people who are selling it. This is Partner Communications Company. According to this press release, a leading Israeli mobile communications operator known for its GSM GPRS services. So Partner Communications might be the people to call. That was 3 years ago. So I have a feeling they're doing something to give you high-speed access that way. Carol's on the line from the South Bay. Hello, Carol. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hello, Carol. Wait a minute. I've lost my connection again. She's on line one. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Leo. Listen, I have a Mac G5 desktop running OS 10, and I have Safari, and I'm just kind of new with the computer, and when I go in the browser on Safari, the little ball, that little,
the beach ball of death.
The little ball runs.
Yes, they call it the beach. There's the blue screen of death on Windows. And the Mac has the beach ball of death where it just goes and goes and goes and goes and goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I have to go. It won't stop. I can't get out. I can't do anything. I have to go to the back of the computer.
No, don't do it. Don't do it. Okay, here's how you stop it. You want to do what's called a force quit.
Sometimes I can't get to the force quit. It won't let me.
Oh, it won't let. Well, now, if the whole computer's beach balled out, then you won't be able to. But if it's just Safari, if you go over to your dock, Safari will be showing up there as running, and you hold down the option control keys and you click on the Safari icon, you should get force quit from the menu there.
Well, sometimes it lets me do that.
And then sometimes it won't even respond to that, huh?
I can't even get into that little Apple thing in the top. It won't do anything. So I got a program called Disk Warrior, and I ran that, and that didn't help too much.
No, that's not for – that just finds disk errors. It's not a disk error.
So what is the problem?
Well, it means that Safari is basically crashed. It's some content came in that Safari couldn't handle, and it can happen to any program. The whole hope is that the operating system itself stays reliable, but that the program maybe it did crash, and all programs crash. Browsers tend to crash more than other programs because they're having to deal with a really unpredictable, broad variety of content. Now, I find Variety very reliable. Variety. Why did I say Variety? Safari, very reliable. But you can have things that will cause it to be less so. What I would suggest, and this is true on any browser or any operating system, Windows or Mac, is to clear the cache out, the temporary files, dump those out. You could do that from Safari's preferences menu to make sure that you don't have anything left lying around that could be causing it to barf, because basically that's what it's doing. It's going, I can't go on. So you want to clear out that temporary stuff. You might also want to make sure that you don't, if your preferences are damaged, that could also cause a problem. So you might want to go into the preferences, Safari preferences, and delete those. On the Mac, that's a very useful tool. Preferences on the Mac are stored in your user's library folder. So you'll look at your home directory. There'll be a folder within there called library, and then there'll be a folder within that called preferences. Preferences, unfortunately, aren't named clearly. They all begin with com, usually begin with com. In the case of Safari, it's com.apple.safari.plist. And you'll be removing that program. Just delete it. It's harmless to delete it. Those are just your preferences. Sometimes that happens a lot on Macs, where the preference file gets damaged or corrupted, and it could cause Safari to be less reliable. Let me see what else I could think of. If it could be if you've added a plugin to Safari that's causing the problem. And sometimes it's just, it may be if you've installed Java or you're going to some sites that have some oddball stuff in there, that can also be causing a problem. So there are a lot of different reasons you can have problems. You might try, under the Safari menu on the menu bar, there's the empty cache command that I was mentioning earlier. It's not in the options. It's under the menu bar. Empty cache. That gets rid of the temporary files. But right above that, there's also a button that I find useful sometimes called Reset Safari. And that brings Safari back to its original basic settings. It erases your browsing history, empties the cache, clears the downloads window, removes cookies. Now, all your passwords that are saved are going to be gone. Any autofill text, you're really going to go back to as if Safari is brand new. But often this is enough to fix whatever the problem is. So I would try that. Safari's, I found it to be quite reliable, but you're the second caller in 2 weeks that's had a problem with it. So maybe I'm wrong. By the way, Tobias, who's in our chat room, says that there are 3G units that you can get just like you can in Europe. He says Cellcom. Cellcom is one that offers 3G cards for your computer. So thank you, Tobias. If you're going to Israel, as our caller was, contact Cellcom. Maybe just let your grandson do that when he gets there, and you could buy a 3G card there. Just give him a little cash. Hey, we're out of time. I do thank you so much for joining me today. We've had some fun. We'll be back on this same channel, same time. I hope you'll come back. On some stations, I'm back again tomorrow. Not all, but some stations. Don't forget that my podcasts are available. In fact, this show is available as a podcast for download from twit.tv. I do a lot of other shows on security and gadgets and Windows and Macintosh. And there's something like, 12 shows a week you can listen to at twit.tv. Thanks to the folks in the chat room. I appreciate it. Thanks to Justin TV for allowing me to do a feed today for the first time. It looks pretty good. Very happy with it. Also to Ustream, longtime video provider for the Tech Guy. We have a great Ustream client that just looks so great. And thanks to Sasha for taking the show notes, to Rebecca in the call screening, and to Steve for running the board. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time on the Tech Guy. You go to vacation.
No, I can't. No.
What? Yes, you must. Where are you going? Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.